Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Today on The Grave Talks, the Airedale Asylum. The concept of a lunatic asylum was universal around most of the world from the 1800s to the mid-1900s. Oftentimes, they were sprawling brick facilities designed to house nearly anyone that mainstream society didn't want to deal with. From legitimate mental illness to simply speaking a different language, there was no end to what could possibly qualify an innocent soul from being locked away at the Airedale Asylum. Today, we hear the very true and very haunted story of Australia's Airedale Asylum, with paranormal investigator William Tabone.
The town that's built it is called Ararat, which was originally a gold mining site where the Chinese walked from South Australia, Adelaide in South Australia, down to where Ararat is now built. They found gold, and unfortunately the European settlers basically come and push them off their land, and the town of Ararat was established. Now, It's probably about it's about a 2-hour drive from Melbourne, which is our capital city, mm-hmm. and rural. And the belief in the old days, as you probably know, with the asylums, is that fresh air, sunlight, etc., was what would help the patients get better. Mm-hmm. So Airedale was actually built on a hill. It's up very high on a hill, so that they could have this sun and have this fresh air. And there was actually three asylums built during this time, all in the same idea to help patients, but built away from Melbourne so that you're not having the lunatics so close to Melbourne. Okay. which is very, very nice of them, I think. the asylum itself was built there because of the location up high, plenty of sun, plenty of air, fresh air, and away from Melbourne. That was really, really the big gist of it. And to help the you know, what they called the lunatics. Mm-hmm. At the time, if you when it was built, if you were coming into the asylum, you would look at the front facade. I'm not sure whether you've seen photos. It's a very beautiful building, but once they went through the doors and they entered, they were basically locked away. It's sort of a bit of a for me, it's a bit of subterfuge, a bit of, you know, a lie. You know, people think and they look like looks beautiful on the outside, but I suppose once you went in the inside, past the administration, and you got entered into the asylum itself, back in the early days, I wouldn't think it would have been a very nice place from the records and things that I've seen.
What is the timetable here? And if you said it, I apologize, but when was it built?
No, I didn't say it.
Okay.
It was built, the records, some records say 1865, some say 1867. I always say between 1865 and 1867,
okay,
just to cover all bases. It closed in 1991, so it had a fairly good run as an asylum. At any one time, when it was actually up and running in full bore, there was up to 1,000 patients in this location. The location itself had 63 buildings at its peak, So a very, very big, asylum, very big location. And a lot of the buildings are still left, but a lot of the outer buildings are now gone, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the main buildings are still there, although a little bit run down. They're still really, really interesting. So the time frame is basically, 160 years, roughly.
Okay. Yeah. So you said 65 to 1991. You said, was it 1865?
Yes, sorry, okay. Yes, 1865.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say 1965. I was going to say that was a pretty short run for an asylum.
That is a short run.
And a pretty late period in time.
Yeah, 1865 to 1991.
Okay. Yes, that is one hell of a run. So I was going to say, well, in the States, ours are like usually around like 1900-ish. This one actually goes back, you know, even further than many of them here in the States. So take me back to, obviously, the term that they used at the time was lunatic. Who would have been classified in that group? Because it's a very sweeping phrase that I know was used, but who would that have been?
Oh, for sure. Look, it really is a sweeping phrase, and I mean the term lunacy is to do with the moon. People they had a belief that when the moon could make people insane. Now the term insanity or any the patients that were admitted there were very wide, and as you said, very sweeping. It could be someone with actual some sort of mental disorder. A psychological disorder, but it could also be someone with epilepsy, Down syndrome, alcoholism, anything that didn't fit in with your normal medicine sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Homosexuality. It's really sad when I said earlier that it was a Chinese sort of goldfield, mm-hmm. and once they were pushed off, a lot of these. A Chinese gentleman couldn't speak English. So when they were still in the area, when the asylum was built, they were actually put in there to keep them out the way.
Oh my God.
And you can imagine not speaking English and being locked up in there just simply because you can't speak English and you were, of a Chinese descent.
Yeah.
The other thing is that always gets me. So this really could be really anything. I'm not sure what they said, like Down syndrome, autism, what we would call autism now, those sort of things. Would be locked up in there, but the big thing for me, it always gets me, is with the females. The females could be locked up for any number of things, including reading too much, answering back to their husbands, hanging washing out on a Sunday, absolutely insane things. The pregnancy blues after you've had a baby, mm-hmm. They could be locked up for that. And the sad thing with the females is that it took two signatures to lock them up, the doctor and the husband, but it took 7 to 8 signatures to actually get them out.
Oh, my gosh. So,
yeah, a lot of them never come out.
So it's like once you're in there, you're in there. I mean, and most of those, absolutely crazy. The only one I can say that I think would be valid would probably be the doing wash on Sundays. I'm kidding.
I understand.
Everything else, not acceptable. Wash on Sundays, lock her up. Yeah, no, that's...
Exactly. And there's an absolute full list. I've got it somewhere here that, it goes through just an enormous amount of... just absolutely crazy things, that could be locked up for.
It's amazing what, the way that the world worked at that time and how essentially it was, whatever the ruling group was, men at that moment in time, exactly. Saying anything that's an basic inconvenience of any any shape or form, not even just like slight, not even like major, but just the slightest of inconveniences, you can get somebody locked away for it. Just amazing.
Yeah. If you were sick of your wife, you wanted to, be single again and go and find another wife, you could lock her up.
That is,
you know what I mean?
That is amazing.
And it
of course leads to, when you look at these buildings now and we know these stories and these realities of what these people went through, it would be tormenting and trying enough just to understand the emotion of someone who went to a mental care facility who legitimately had mental problems and needed care and help, and the torment that they're going through, just having those sort of things going on with their minds. But it's a whole other thing when you have people who are not having any sort of breakdown or issues that are just being locked away for no reason other than someone doesn't want you there.
Convenience. Yeah. And you know, I think in that case, eventually you would have fallen into some sort of insanity, I would imagine.
Eventually, you're going to develop something. Eventually, you're going to need to be in some sort of a care facility because you've been broken down, essentially, so much to the point of feeling, you know, in a very rough term, insane. Just amazing. So 63 buildings on this giant campus. I'm guessing did different ones specialize in different areas, or was it
for
just
sure. Okay. Well, the place itself was pretty much self sustainable. It had a market garden, it had a bakery, it had a massive kitchen. You know, so they pretty much fed themselves, and they had, you know, buildings obviously to do with that sort of stuff. But you know, there's a huge male and a huge female ward. If you look at the building itself, the main building is a horseshoe. So the front of the building where you enter is administration. So the governor's office, and apartments, all the office stuff. And then running off to the right side was the female ward, which was a three-story building. The part of the building was three stories, running down the right side, and the same on the left side being the male building. So that was the main part. But then you had in the center of the asylum, there's a massive building which was it had offices for doctors. It had a hall for dining, the kitchen, bakery, etc. were in the back of that building. And then you've got all the little buildings. You've got two hospitals, which were a male and female, where they used to conduct lobotomies and that sort of things. You've got a chapel, a staff quarters, which is a three-story building, and then the morgue, etc. And all these little sundry buildings, which were workshops and those sort of things. So everything had its place.
At the time of its closing in 1991, were all of these buildings still in use, or did they just kind of have it narrowed down to a handful of active facilities?
They were dwindling down. A lot of buildings were basically not being used, and they at the time of closing, which was unfortunately was a thing through the Victorian government at the time. There were a lot of patients that should have still been institutionalized were being released. Public and, you know, getting outpatient help. They shut down. Now, the one of the buildings that was as part of the asylum is there was a forensic ward which looked after the sort of the nastier, the more criminal side of prisoners. And that was built, that only was in operation for about 3 years. So it was built, and quite a big building, and then pretty much shut down. So I think it was only 2 years. I think it was 1989 it was actually open, and shut down in 1991. So, you know, there was quite a bit there. That building was, they were basically up, that building, the forensics was up, sorry, was in use up until the closure.
What you said that there was something with the government that shut it down. What was the reason why they said these buildings need to go? Do you know?
It wasn't just that. It wasn't just Arredale. It was across the board.
Sure.
In a policy change, in the sense that they a lot of not just to do with the asylums and such, but overall a lot of things were shut down because the government didn't see them as being necessary. Mm-hmm. They had outpatient facilities, and I think it was, to be honest, it comes down to finances.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Unfortunately, they sometimes they look at only the one aspect, and it doesn't pan out very well.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, when you look at these cases and these facilities, Were there room for improvement? There's always room for improvement. Obviously, by 91, things had gotten a hell of a lot better than they were in 1865. But still, you're right. A lot of it did come down to finances. We had the same issues in the United States where you've seen those and a lot of those buildings still, well, not a lot, but some are still standing, these giant campuses. And then many people in the States anyways, if it was severe enough, they did go to other facilities if they were in existence, but many were really literally just put out onto the streets. Was that that's the same case there?
Same here.
Yeah.
Yep. Same here. You know, I mean, there are other facilities, but, and you know, there were still some facilities, but literally, you know, on your way and, you know, make sure you see your, you know, your caseworker or your doctor, or, you know, and I mean, some of these people, you know, they go off their meds or they, you know, whatever, and, and you know, they're lost. You know what I mean? A lot of patients, as you know, even in the States, there, some of them were institutionalized most of their life.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, went in quite young and spent, you know, spent their life there. It's really sad. You know, it's really, really sad. And you know, unfortunately, they go out on the streets and are lost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Incredibly inhumane, you know, and it really all in the war, in the argument was made of this being, oh, this will be the best thing for them. In reality, no, it's finances. And that's what it all came down to.
Pretty much.
when we're talking about this place shutting down in 91, before we even get to the time of, okay, doors are closed and now this building is here and post being a asylum, take me back. How far are you aware of the first stories coming out of this place being from? Was it, were stories kind of rumored to be coming out of this building or this complex while it was still an active asylum from nurses and doctors and visitors and things of that nature, or does that more so pick up completely after the fact?
Really, really after the fact, as far as I found, well, that has come to me. I haven't got a lot of stories, as in paranormal side of things, while it's in action. The stories you hear from, while it's operational, are more to do with behavior, you know, negative things happening physically, like, you know, with living people, and which I think set up a lot of the things that will happen, that will be experienced as a paranormal, if you know what I mean. So while it's operational, the issues were very much with living people. And then the paranormal stories tend to come later. I think that comes down to them, not saying there wasn't paranormal experiences, but I think it comes down to one being the era. You know, nowadays, we, with all the paranormal and things around, we speak a lot freely. Back then, even up until the 90s, it was excuse me, it was still quite a taboo subject to speak about and to discuss. You know, you're insane, etc. Excuse pun. You know, and being medical professionals, or, you know, in the mental health industry, I think they wouldn't have spoken about it freely.
Sure.
So, do you know what I mean? But also, a lot of the things that I think might have been experienced, even mainly by patients, you know, well, they're insane. What do they know? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
They're delusional. And then, again, on top of that, you have things that are happening that people aren't even realizing, you know, that are paranormal. So it's because there's so much happening there. It's so busy. They were lost, I believe. I believe they were happening. Mm-hmm. But I believe they were lost, if you know what I mean.
Sure. I mean, kind of caught up in the mix of everything. And and like you had said, nobody's going to believe a patient. And we can talk more about that a little bit further down in the conversation, because there's an angle to that I'd like to get your opinion on. But before we get to that, what were some of the first cases that you're aware of either documented or just hearsay of there being paranormal activity at the Auradale Asylum?
Okay, well, the asylum was, when it was shut down, it was basically locked off. It was just it was really left to rot, and then it was I was in there well before any tours and anything happened. We had access to investigate the place, and the place was pretty much untouched for a long time before we were there. So the people I spoke to there was, you know, rumors of security guards. They would witness, you know, different things banging. But that, I mean, that could be just, you know, wind, etc. It's an old building, you know, things
sure.
like that. Footsteps, voices, etc. I've heard a lot of little bits and pieces, but nothing that would say, you know, that would make me, you know, that would shock me, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
One of the funniest things I suppose I have heard is that, wasn't funny at the time, I suppose, for the boys, but two boys broke into the asylum, teenage boys, and actually went into the morgue and, being silly children, locked themselves in the freezers.
Okay.
Luckily, the place was patrolled by security. Mm-hmm. A security guard heard a commotion, obviously young and screaming, coming from the morgue, went there, opened the door, let these boys come running out, come out and took off. But I can imagine what the guard was thinking, you know what I mean, what was going on. But, you know, that wasn't paranormal, but that's the sort of things that would happen because being a small town, there was not a lot to do. The asylum was there, they would break in, etc. So, but you don't hear a lot of the stories from those, you know, from teenagers that are broken, unfortunately, but you can imagine what they experienced.
Yeah, I mean, a place like that, you would certainly have a lot of attraction to it just from the teenagers and the local lore and, oh, it was the crazy house or whatever they want to call it.
Definitely.
Then you go in there and you do some adventuring and probably most of the time nothing happens, but you're certainly fishing for it.
Definitely. But, the good thing is it employed a lot of the people from the town. So even the people, you know, if they've passed on or they're no longer in the area, the people that their families are still there and their children, etc. And you go into town and if you start talking to someone, they have stories, you know, they tell you different things, whether they be paranormal or just about the asylum itself, you know, the history, it's great. It's a great town to speak to these people. They're quite open about the history and all that sort of stuff. So. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
So what are some of the stories that intrigued you to investigate it more, that beyond the kids getting locked in a morgue, which sounds like a horrible situation, but what were some of the actual pieces of paranormal evidence or cases that you heard about and went, wow, that's really interesting?
Yeah. Well, as I said, for me, we were probably one of the first groups to get in there to do an investigation. And so, you know, my stories, you know, I sort of tend to start from that point, which was, well, you know, I don't know, 12 years ago, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, I have the Australian Paranormal Society, which is my group. We were basically a family base to start with. So we had a group. I had another group that I had, which we started with just a family. We were basically joined with the Australian Paranormal Society, which we founded. A group of people. All these other people left, and we were left with this society. So it's really a family organization to start with. So we went there. We had access to the building. The first time really to get in and investigate this place. There was an amazing amount of activity. For example, my daughter is a psychic, same as my wife, and we were down in the morgue, and. My daughter said, she said, there's, and she's one of the most courageous investigators I've ever seen, really. And she said, there's something following me. And by the time we'd walked from the morgue up to the central building, the central hall where the kitchen and all that were, which was our base, she had become really ill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I thought, this is really, you know, this is really unusual. And I decided, it was quite late in the, you know, not heading towards early morning, and so I said, well, we're going to go. We packed up. I literally had to carry her to the car. She was that affected, and we drove out the gates. As soon as I drove out the gates, she came good.
Wow.
That's the effect these things happen. Now, having said that, I've had to pull people out of different buildings because they've been affected, and we do a healing. But the things that this is more on the spiritual side of things, I suppose. so the energy is not necessarily negative, but it can affect people. Some are negative, obviously, but it really affects people because it's so emotional and it's so heavy. But being in that place, we spent a lot of time there. I used to spend weekends locked in there. So we've had experiences from full-bodied apparitions. I opened. I take a tour through there once a month. We do an investigation tour, and we were down in the forensics building, and I had one of the clients with me, and I was just about to open the door to take everyone out. So I opened the door. She's standing next to me, and in front of us is a short man in a patient's outfit, which was an old woolen sort of top and pants. He looked at us. We looked at him for a second or two. He was there, and he looked physical. And then next thing you know, he didn't disappear, but he ran to our left. But he ran like it was super fast. It was not normal, you know. And I looked at this lady. I was about to ask her, "Did you see this?" And she's standing there with her mouth open. And I said, "Yeah, you saw what I saw, didn't you?" She said, "Yes." And you know, those sort of things. We've captured shadow people walking from one room to another in the staff quarters. We've had I've had an iron bar thrown at me in a building where there was only two of us. The building was locked. A lot of things. So we've heard disembodied voices. We've been touched. So there's a lot of activity in there. And as an example, we captured 87 Class A EVPs in one weekend.
Wow.
These things are just amazing, you know. So the activity is so widespread that it is on from one end of the scale to the other, you know, very minor things that you know are unusual but you question, to things where I've seen a medium was being we were actually doing a Gansfeld experiment during one of our research things there, and on film we've got this investigator basically being grabbed by the arm and yanked off the ground backwards. So it's very, very, very active and heavy location. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, you unpacked a whole lot of experiences right there in that last 5 minutes. That's fine. I want to talk about some of those specifically. Let's go back to the area you're talking about, shadow people in the staff quarters.
Yep.
What's always interesting to me about facilities like this is just, I mean, there's not a question of who haunts the location, who's the one person, because there's obviously far more than one person haunting the location. So let's kind of break that down into different areas, different sections. Before I even ask that question, do you feel like there are certain individuals that just kind of stick to their specific areas in the campus?
Definitely. We tend to find, excuse me, we tend to find that's similar spirits in some areas, but there are others that do sort of follow us around, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Like when we're speaking about the staff quarters there, we tend to have a few spirits that show up now and then that are regulars there. We don't tend to pick them up anywhere else. The other one, you know, there's some in the female hospital, some in the chapel that show up on a regular basis just there. Male wards, female wards. So right through the building, they all sort of tend to have their residence, if you know, your permanent residence, and then they'll have your walk-ins and the ones that move around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's to me, and I'm a shocker with names. So for me, sometimes I'll hear a name come up, I'll go, oh yeah, we've had them before, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But you know, I'll remember a face forever, but a person's name really is a tough one for me sometimes. So for example, in the female hospital, we have several spirits that tend to show up regularly. We have a Margaret, a Rose, and a Mary, which are quite common, you know, Anglo-European names, you know.
Sure.
What I mean? But they do show up through mediums. They tend to pick up on them quite a lot through our devices, whether they be a portal or what we call a GD box, which is similar to a portal, an ovalis, spirit box, any of the equipment that we use while we're in there. We tend to get these names constantly coming through in these individual areas, and I find that interesting because it's repetitive, and it's specific to a location. So if it was just a random, then we would put the same names up over in the men's ward, for example. So to me, that's what I find interesting, is where this evidence that's popping up is repeated and repeatable in specific areas of the location. Yeah.
Obviously, those being extremely common names, but I'm going to ask this. Are there any records that exist for the hospital that can be looked at or anything like that where you can say, yes, I can find that these, at least some people with these names had passed away at the facility?
Yep. The thing is with this location is it's online. It's very hard to find them. You need to actually go into the records office and... The records there are quite open. The problem with, well, as you know with yourself, with any research is when you've only got a first name, you know what I mean? It's very hard to match, you know, to match specifically. For example, Mary, there might have been 100 Marys in that asylum at once. You know
sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but we do have some that are specific. For example, we have... a matron that turns up quite often, which is, they call her Nurse Kerry. excuse me, I'm losing my voice.
Sure.
pardon. And she tends to turn up quite often. And what I find interesting with these things is people that have never been there, that, you know, are really quite novice, you know, never really done a lot of tours, a lot of things like this, will come in and, you know, they'll pick up a name or something, or they'll, you know, something will come up and they'll have some sort of, what would you call it, say, connection with the name, you know, and
sure.
whether it be specifically for that person, but it's coincidence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to mix a bit of the old spiritualist exercises, you know, from the old spiritualist movement. So we have a thing called the human pendulum. You might have heard of it, may not. Basically, all it is where we ask the spirit to affect someone, to make them, you know, feel a bit off balance or something, and then we put them in the center and we have a person in front and back, and we ask questions. And one direction is yes, one direction is no. It's just another exercise that we try. Well, we had a nurse on our tour, and she was in the center, and you know, we had Nurse Kerry come through, so we're getting some really specific answers to certain things that we could get. And she had never been on a tour before. She came out of it. She said, I could feel her. And she, you know, and she was crying, this lady, because she was affected. But, you know, the names, there are specific names that we can match to records. But a lot of them, as I said, are generic. So you have, you know, your Mary, your John, etc. Unless you have surnames, it's really hard to... let's narrow them down.
Sure. That wraps up part one of our conversation with William Tabone about the Airedale Asylum. In part two, we'll ask William what caused a spirit to throw an iron bar at him. Is there anything that seems to bring the spirits out easier than others? How does the emotional energy feel throughout the Airedale Asylum, from building to building and even room to room? Why do some spirits show up as shadow people and some as full-bodied apparitions? And what does the future hold for the haunted Airedale Asylum? All that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You can do that by going to patreon.com/thegravetalks or our website, thegravetalks.com, and click become a gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you'll get access to all of our bonus material and more. Also, advanced episodes of the program released to you months before they're released to the public. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click become a gravekeeper. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruce.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Thanks for listening.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, You save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.